But first this morning, Michigan spends $2 billion annually on its prison system. That's slightly more than one-fifth of the state's general fund, according to a 2012 House Fiscal Agency report. In order to whittle down the size of the prison system's financial burden, Michigan lawmakers have been looking at private companies to provide services. Earlier this month, state officials opted to contract with Aramark, a Pennsylvania-based company, to provide food services for the 43,000 people incarcerated here in Michigan. Officials say the contract could save the state $16 million. But some say Aramark's track record in other states is spotty at best. And during its lame duck session last December, Michigan lawmakers passed legislation that would pave the way for more privatization of prison services and even entire prisons. But critics say state efforts to save money through privatization of prisons are fraught with examples across the country of dubious budget savings, dangerously inadequate services, and moral conundrums. Here to talk about some of these apparent red flags is Natalie Holbrook, Program Director of the Michigan Criminal Justice Program for the American Friends Service Committee. Hi, Natalie.
Hi.
And joining us by phone from Austin, Texas, Bob Leibel, Executive Director of Grassroots Leadership. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Natalie, start off here and tell us first about this new contract with Aramark to provide food for Michigan's prison inmates. Tell us about this.
So the Department of Corrections has a $2 billion budget, as you pointed out, and they've been making efforts to cut that budget. And so one of the pushes from the legislature has been to privatize food services because they think that savings can be made by privatizing food services. And obviously with the request for proposals and the potential contract hanging out there right now, Aramark has promised savings of nearly 20% in food services. And so we're concerned because Aramark does not have a good track record across the country. They make cost savings through lower wages for service for their workers. And they, I think, are going to be paying less per day for meals when we already are paying on average about $2 per day for the three meals provided for prisoners in our Department of Corrections. So if you can imagine the quality of food on $2 a day for three meals already, which I have very huge concerns about, I am concerned about the quality of food that we currently are serving to prisoners. So if you're even going to pay less money for food per day, I'm concerned about that quality of food. And I'm hoping that in this discussion we can get at the nutritional value of food. We have this captive population, and we should be doing everything we can to ensure wellness of prisoners and to create healthy prisoners while they're inside. And if we're serving them sodium laden soy-based food, it's very problematic and heavily processed food, and I think that's what we are serving. The other problem with Aramark, and I'm concerned about locally sourced food, where it might be coming from with the Aramark contract, and none of us have seen the contract. It's still floating in Department of Management, Technology, and Budget, and with the Michigan Department of Corrections. So I'm concerned on multiple levels. There's also this issue of oversight and accountability. You have a Department of Corrections that's a state agency. And we, as the public, as taxpayers, should have open access to information around budgetary issues and what's going on in our prisons. And when you add a private corporation into the mix, you add layers of bureaucracy, and it becomes more difficult to have oversight and accountability.
Go a little bit deeper, though, into why people should care so much about what. Why is it so important what incarcerated people who are in jail on a jailable crime, why is what they eat really, should that be such a big concern?
Well, I think there's multiple concerns. We have a $429 million four-year contract with Corizon Healthcare Services, and we also pay more for nurses. We have to provide health care for people in prison. So we should be concerned about prisoners' health and well-being. Also, a large chunk of people are coming back to our community, so we should be treating them with dignity and respect while they're there. And the other issue with food is, and historically, if you go back in time and look at what precipitated disturbances in prisons across the country, in the 70s and the 80s, food was always an issue. Prisoners need to be treated with dignity and respect, and they need to be treated humanely, but we don't want to be serving them bad quality food skimping on food and then potentially adding to disturbances within the prisons.
There was a food riot not too long ago, I want to say in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
And Aramark held that contract.
And Aramark held that contract. And you're also asserting that that there is a health price to pay because of the poor nutritional quality. People are fed substandard food in prisons and they end up seeing a doctor more often as a result?
It could potentially happen. We also have a large lifer population. People are growing old inside. If we serve them poor quality of food, and they also may come to prison with chronic health issues to begin with, or they may develop chronic health issues while they're there, in the long term, their health care costs are going to skyrocket. I mean, I think that while we have people inside, we should be teaching wellness and nutrition, we should be teaching healthy living, and we should be providing food that's healthy. The other place that people have access to food in prisons is the commissary. And when I look at the commissary list, it's oftentimes candy that's available, ramen noodles, which have a lot of sodium in them. There's sausages and tortilla chips and canned food and processed food. And so the access that people have to quality, fresh food is very limited. And I think some prisoners want healthy food. Some prisoners may need to be taught to desire healthy food. Already some prisoners want healthy food. So I think that if they were offered more healthy food, more fresh options, then things would be better inside.
Let's bring Bob Seibel into this discussion. Bob, last December, the Michigan legislature passed a bill that would allow the Department of Corrections to competitively bid for operations and services as long as it results in at least 10% savings. Some versions of the legislation even specifically mentioned the Baldwin Youth Correctional Facility. That's a private prison here in Michigan that sat vacant since 2005. Bob, give us some history on Baldwin. What's happened there?
Sure. So, you know, I think that this bill, was drafted without looking at the history of this facility, or perhaps drafted under the sort of influence of private prison lobbyists. These are corporations that have more than $1 billion in annual revenue and turn around and spend a substantial portion of that in lobbying and campaign contributions to ensure that their bottom lines are met. And in Michigan, you all have a very troubled history with the corporation that operates the Baldwin facility. This was the Michigan Youth Correctional Facility that was originally opened in 1999 for youth who had been sentenced as adults. But very quickly, that facility experienced major problems. It was operated by the company called Wackenhut Corrections Corporation, which later became the GEO Group, the second largest private prison corporation in the United States. The Grand Rapids Press did a report on this and found that the prison had more violence than its state-run counterparts. State lawmakers looked into it. There was a series of hearings. They found that there were allegations that 95% of the guards working at the prison had no previous corrections experience, and that the facility had 33 attempted suicides in the first half of 2000 alone.
What does GEO Group do exactly, though? Do they run the whole operation or just parts of the operation or what?
Yeah, so GEO Group and its sort of counterpart Corrections Corporation of America are for-profit prison corporations that operate prisons in states and for the federal government across the United States. So these are companies that have turned mass incarceration into a really big business. These are companies that have annual revenues of more than $3 billion combined. They're companies that have become big players when it comes to shaping criminal justice and immigration policy. They spend millions of dollars lobbying and on campaign contributions.
But to both of you, a question. What is the public to make of the potential savings involved in privatization? There are some prisons, I'm led to believe, in other states that do seem to be working okay with some degree of privatization. And I'm sure it varies. But can you candidly give us a sense of how much money prisons with privatized service might be able to save taxpayers? Natalie?
I think in the long run, the question is a different question. We need to be working to decarcerate our system, get less people in the system, only hold people in the system who we really truly think are dangerous, and we can reduce costs that way. So I don't think that privatization is the answer to cost savings. I think there are other mechanisms for cost savings.
How many people incarcerated in Michigan right now?
44,000 people.
No, but how many of them don't really need to be in prison? Do you know?
I would say there's a good 12,000 people. That is based on people who might be past their earliest release date, drug crimes that people are going to prison for. We send people to prison for longer lengths of stay than other states. So I think that we really, and I just threw that number out there, but I do think it's a legitimate number. I think that we have to enact presumptive parole in this state, where people are actually paroled at their earliest release date if they've demonstrated good institutional conduct and have not demonstrated bad institutional conduct, and we can get more people out of the system and have larger cost savings. I think that privatization opens us up for litigation that could cost us a heck of a lot of money down the road. It also opens us up for poor quality in our system. And I think that we should have while I hate that we have professionalized correctional positions and staff, because prisons have just we have mass incarceration in this country, and it's really problematic that we are relying on prisons for employment in some of our communities, and that bothers me. I think that the people, while they are there, should be professional. They should be paid a decent wage, a living wage, and they should not be paid skimpy wages. And I think that privatization leads to staff who are paid skimpy wages.
Let's get Bob Leibel in here. Where's the line as far as you're concerned, Bob? How do we know when we've just cut too much from our prison system?
Well, I mean, I think when it comes to privatization, though, the biggest cost savings for private prison corporations is in staffing, right? I mean, that they simply pay people less and pay them less in terms of benefits as well. And the result of that is that you have a much higher turnover rate than you do in the public sector. A state study here in Texas found that private prisons in Texas in 2009, I believe, had a 90% annual staff turnover rate. Now,
okay,
Imagine running any kind of institution on a 90% annual turnover rate.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, I'm afraid. We want to thank both of our guests for joining us here today on an important discussion. Natalie Holbrook is the program director of the Michigan Criminal Justice Program for the American Friends Service Committee, and Bob Leibel is executive director of Grassroots Leadership and is based in Austin, Texas. Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.